B-Pod Studios.
This is Felger.
Felgstradamus.
And Maz.
You're not going to get anybody half decent for free.
Presented by DraftKings on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
With Cam Newton, how is he progressing after hurting his hand the other week? And do you expect him at practice this week?
Yeah, he practiced last week. I'd expect him this week, too.
Hour number two, Felger and Maz, brought to you by DraftKings on 98.5 The Sports Hub and the simulcast on NBC Sports Boston, where we beam across New England and the country. It's DraftKings as well. Reentry Mondays are brought to you by our friends at East Boston Savings Bank. We come to you from our Town Fair Tire Studios in Dorchester. Now we take care of all the bills. Cam Newton is back for the Patriots.
Yay.
That's too bad. You don't really wish injury on anyone, although this is just a hand. I don't feel that guilty. It's not like I'm rooting for a concussion or something that can really mess him up long. And, you know, this is just a little thumb thing. But he's back. And he's back out on the practice field. So what are the reports about how he looked, Murray? Do we know? What do we got?
Well, apparently, like, Mac Jones was the star of the day from everyone that I'm reading.
Good.
You know, that was down there. Again, I just had in the update that Mike Reese, he said that Jones looked dialed in, ball going to the right spot most often with decisiveness, and his accuracy was on point despite the rain. Reading here from Jeff Howe, Mac Jones, 13 of 20, did a nice job pushing the ball down the field. His lone check down was a result of quick pressure. Only two missed throws, two drops, one throw away, one bat at the line, one incompletion due to good coverage. So all these guys and gals that are reporting on today's practice really were impressed with Mac Jones more than anything else.
So, again, I was just reading the Phil Perry tweet. Cam Newton struggled from time to time with his accuracy. Majority says Cam Newton was more erratic than the other quarterbacks today. Oh, you don't say. He appeared to have some issues. Slow down with that. He appeared to have some issues. I lost the tweet. I'm reading from the TV screen. Reese says, at a rainy practice, one of the things I watched was QBs and how they handled it. I'm not a scout, but took note that Mac Jones seemed to mostly show command in that area, whereas the other quarterbacks had some balls sail on them. Plenty of inclement weather when playing in New England. Yes, yes, yes. So Newton showed some inaccuracy. He's got a banged up hand, of course, and he sucked to begin with.
Exactly. I mean, then you add in weather on top of it. What do you think you're going to get? That ball's going to be flying all over the place. Like one of those little popcorn machines, those ping pong balls jumping around the lottery. You don't know where that sucker's going.
So Cam Newton coming back. You think he's coming back because he feels there's a real competition here? Or the hand isn't that bad or, you know, whatever. Either way, I just have a hard time believing there's an actual competition. I think my guess is Bill has his mind made up about what he's going to do, which is the case in 99% of starting jobs in the NFL. There's very little competition in these camps. Same with any camp. Spring training, the same thing, Maz. I mean,
it's a sham.
It's a sham.
No, there's a few spots at the end of the roster maybe where someone could always sneak on, but most of it's already decided. Do you believe, Bill, that Cam did that camp practice last week?
No, I don't believe that.
Okay.
So why do you think he says it like that?
Because he's already made the determination that Cam Newton is the quarterback.
Oh,
he's seen. He has his ammunition to blast back at anybody that doubts him, especially if Mac Jones looks better than him and the ones that the media can cover. No. I've seen him. He has been practicing. This is the guy. I don't care what your eyes are telling you. Cam Newton's the quarterback.
I told you, I'm more and more convinced that something did happen with Newton and it may have been off the field. Because last week when he was asked about it, Bill A acknowledged that there was a problem because it was related where at the time that we saw, or so we thought, that Newton injured his thumb on a helmet. And so Bill's now going to talk about it because that's what everyone's saying. And then he comes back and says, well, you guys were overplaying it anyway. He was practicing. I don't believe him for a second.
Me neither.
I don't. I think there was an incident off the field and I think they've covered it up. And now again, was it a huge deal off the field? Probably not. But even so, I think something happened.
Okay, how much of the quarterback thing is predetermined? Bill's got in his mind what he's going to do with the position, and it's going to take an act of Congress, an act of God, something really dramatic for him to change course, which is the way it is most jobs on most teams in this league. That's the way it works. There's very little competition for starting jobs. So we'll see. I mean, we just showed some video there of Newton chucking the ball 5 feet over receivers' heads. Was that from today? I think it was. Boy, there were some wild balls that we just saw right there. Yet Bill's in the covering mode for Cam Newton. What does that tell you? Still his guy?
For now.
He also kind of covered for Stephon Gilmore, who now we know it's been reported in a couple different places, Cam Garigian of the Herald, most notably. Stephon Gilmore is officially holding out. This is a mandatory camp. he's going to be fined or is subject to up to $90,000 in fines if he doesn't show up, and he's not showing up. He wants a contract. And when Bill was asked about it today, he said, is Stephon Gilmore, you know, here today? Is he one of the new faces? He said, well, we're kind of scrambling to get things going this morning, so I didn't really get a chance to see everybody myself, so we'll see where we're at. Think of that for a second. Bill, is your starting corner here? Your number one corner, is he here?
I don't know. I just sort of walked through the locker room, and I we didn't really do a head count, so, you know, I don't know. I mean, we're going to find out who's out there on the field, and then, you know, and then I'll know, but I don't really know. What's that about?
Oh, he doesn't want to fuel the fire of a media story, which is that Gilmore's holding out. So he didn't want to even engage. He just said, I'm going to play stupid here.
Here, listen to this. So here's a follow-up. He mentioned something about the weather and guys getting here and whatnot, and so Tommy Kern follows up on it. Play number three there, Stu, if you could, please.
Just following on the question about Steph and the attendance, what do you mean there was some weather? Did weather prevent people from coming to this? And given that it's mandatory, are these going to be excused by the team?
Yeah, it was just the travel arrangements over the weekend. So not sure exactly, you know, how all that worked out. We were close on a couple guys this morning, but we'll catch up on that after we get done here and see where we're at.
All right. So it's not a big deal. I mean, so you understand how the operation works. We don't see people out there in mandatory minicamp. Are you saying let's not go over the barricades here if it's not that big a deal, in other words?
No, I'm saying today's the first day. They okay. just got in here a little while ago. I'm not sure if everybody is here. Okay. We didn't take attendance at the meeting, but we'll find out, you know, who's here and who isn't soon enough.
All right. Thank you.
That includes the players that were here last week and the players that weren't here last week and everything else.
It's like he doesn't know.
No. I love too how Tom said thank you and Bill went on. Like all of a sudden now he wants to talk. Because Bill's trying to tell you what's going on.
Who's here and who isn't soon enough.
I mean,
right, thank you.
This
that
isn't
includes the players that were here last week and the players that weren't here last week and everything else.
Thank you.
This isn't the 88th player on the 90-man roster. This isn't.
It's your star cornerback.
Yeah, it's not the undrafted kicker from Michigan.
It's the number one your number one corner, Pro Bowl, one of the highest played guys you've had in here, the highest, one of the biggest contracts you've ever given anybody, and one of the most important guys on your defense. And you're asked if he's here, and you say, "Yeah, we haven't taken a head count. We had a meeting, but we didn't take attendance. We'll find out tonight." I don't know. I just sort of walked through the locker room. I don't know who's here. I don't know.
The guy who pays more attention to detail than any other coach in the league.
Right.
Does anyone believe that?
Yeah, no, we had some travel issues. Well, what travel issues?
Travel issues. Yeah. So, you know, as I was talking to someone earlier, like this is...
Gilmore forgot a mask.
This is also what it could be. It's another example of Bill knows he doesn't have the locker room, he doesn't have his players, and he can't bust balls. You know, again, you go back in time, a previous incarnation of this Patriots dynasty, and we're talking, you know, guys that were Stephon Gilmore and better and more important, whether it be Vince Wilfork or Logan Mankins or even going to someone like Malcolm Butler or back in the day, Lawyer Malloy, you name it. What a ball buster Bill was with these guys. He would never have said in that time that if someone, Asante Samuel misses the mandatory minicamp, you think Bill would have said, yeah, you know, there was some weather. We didn't really take attendance. I don't really know. I just walked through there, but we didn't take a head count. So, we'll find out. No, he would have snorted into the microphone and said, the players are here. The ones are going to play. The ones that aren't here, I don't remember.
Yeah, right. We'll focus on the guys who are here.
Exactly.
What he said. And also, let's ask Adelius Thomas if he was able to use the weather as a previous excuse. Because when he said, do I have to get my car like George Jetson and fly above the traffic?
It's not the Jetsons.
You know, because again, Bill wouldn't accept the weather as an excuse back then.
He never has.
Oh God, he's lying because he doesn't want to fuel the.
Well, he doesn't want to piss off his player.
Yeah, and look, and I would also say that he doesn't want to fuel the story, which is the fact that Gilmore didn't show because he doesn't like his contract.
But it's not just that. It's he doesn't have hand anymore. You know, he can't he can't run the thing the way he used to run it. I think, oh, this is just, I'm sort of take workshopping it, I guess. It's sort of like he's sort of letting him off the hook, or it's a softer touch to the whole thing because he can't be the guy that he was 10 years ago to this roster because they suck and he doesn't have Brady to fall back on and et cetera. Like I just think there's something like that.
That makes sense.
Where it's a little bit more of the chill Bill thing or a different kind of Bill. He knows he has to manage it differently. Can't be the tyrant that he once was because the team's not going to stick around for it or they're not going to hang in there with him like they used to. He's got to take a different approach with them. I wonder if that's it.
Sure. Look, it's absolutely possible because he doesn't have the juice in there that he's had before. I think that part of it has to factor in. Yes, absolutely. I wonder how they're playing it. Because Bill has a plan. So I wonder, are they just going to go into the year without him and let him jump in week 9 or 10 or whatever the number is? Like somewhere in there, he loses the year of service time, right? So are they prepared to just have him for a half season? Is that what they're going to do? Like, I wonder. Because there's no way Gilmore's coming in and playing for $7 million. No way.
Yeah.
Especially after the money that they spent in this offseason.
Doesn't feel like it.
No, if I were him, I wouldn't.
Okay, so Gilmore out, Newton back. What does that all mean? Bill's attitude. Yeah, it's the weather. Now it's the weather? Yeah, there's some travel arrangements over the weekend. Not exactly sure how it all worked out. Yeah. I understand, guys. There's some fog out there. It's rainy.
Like George Jetson.
Come or not come. I don't, I need to take a head count. I don't really know who's here or not.
It's the new chill Bill.
So what's up with that one? Your thoughts on that, mixing it with the baseball stuff, to your calls right after these words.
Boston's home for sports.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking 5 of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on 5 we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top 5? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
You mentioned being happy to see some new faces. Is Stephon Gilmore one of those faces today?
Yeah, like I said, we're kind of scrambling to get things going this morning. So I didn't really get a chance to see everybody myself. So we'll see where we're at.
And just in general, obviously we haven't seen him during the voluntary portion of the OTAs. Just how important is he to your back end and what he brings to the team?
Yeah, well, there's a lot of players we haven't seen in OTAs and, it's all the players are important and, like to have all of them.
It's that first part I love. Is he here? Ah, we're scrambling to get things going. Bill's scrambling. He came in last minute. You're like me tearing into the parking lot here at 159. With crap all over the place and just trying to race in here to get here on time because I left late. That's Bill. He just came in here scrambling. I'm not sure who's here.
He didn't know. He didn't know that a minicamp was starting this week.
give me a break.
Slipped his mind.
Back to your phones on this. The Red Sox stuff. We'll mix in some other items as well because this is a reentry Monday. Lucas in Waltham. Go ahead, Lucas.
Hey, what's going on, guys? Thanks for having me. Someone said that Belichick lost the locker room, and I think that's absolutely ludicrous. Most respected head coach in the league, easily 6-time Super Bowl champion. Yeah, they had an off year last year, but no way they lost the locker room. The only reason they're keeping this Gilmore thing under wraps is because that's just what they do. They don't want the public finding out about their business. It's just a tale as old as time.
So I don't think he can bully his locker room and his players like he used to, Lucas. How's that?
I don't know. I think he can. They had one bad year. I think the guys still respect him there. They still trust him, and I think he can still do that.
Was everything cool with them after the Malcolm Butler decision, you think?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, clearly Malcolm Butler did something to get benched in that Super Bowl. We don't know what exactly. It never got released to the public, but he did something pretty bad.
Yeah, well, I mean, define bad.
I disagree. This guy will defend Bill no matter what. Bill would feed him a plate of dog crap, and the guy would think it's a freaking chocolate souffle.
But why the change in Bill's behavior after that Super Bowl? Why chill Bill? Why taking these guys out for, you know, hot dogs and cornhole, whatever the hell it was that offseason? Like, he specifically changed because I think he needed to, because I did think he lost some of those guys.
And it's not just that.
Including the quarterback.
Yeah, but then it's another thing when you come back and win the Super Bowl next year, and you're the cat's ass, and it's my way or the highway, and we're going to win with or without you. It's different when you're not winning anymore, and the player then looks at you and says, why am I going to allow myself to be treated like dirt to go 7-9? It's not quite the same, Bill, and he recognizes that to his credit, caller.
He doesn't have the trump card anymore, and I don't mean the former president. I mean the former quarterback. He doesn't have Brady there to save his ass.
So now his star player is openly defying him, holding out over money. One of the worst things the Patriots, you know, you fight Bill over money. That is a death sentence. And when he's asked about it today, he says, I haven't even really checked yet. I don't know who's here. And I'm scrambling. Came in late. I don't even know.
Tommy overslept.
Tom and Quincy on the Sox. Go ahead, Tom.
Hey, what's going on, guys? Hey, I know that, you know, we've ripped analytics top to bottom for years now. I blame most of this spite attack stuff on the analytics, solely based on they think they can get guys for minimal money, depending on one certain skill that they think they have. That's the whole point of that Colton Brewer experiment that they tried, which sent me through the roof. But I saw a thing yesterday, a kid posted on Twitter, the 10 days leading up to that June 3rd announcement that they're going to pay attention to this spite attack stuff. The league with all of baseball had a .231 average. The following 10 games, .245. We're up 14 points in 10 days.
That's right, Tom. So it's a baseball story. They went from .231 to .245, baseball did. The Red Sox went from whatever, 4-something ERA to 8. Their ERA, the starter's ERA, is over 8 in the last 9 games. 8!
They gave up 18 runs yesterday and 8 home runs.
8 home runs. 8. So, yes, all of baseball is water seeking its level across baseball. Here, the finger is out of the dike, as we like to say. It is a deluge because you benefited more from any other team, and now you're suffering more than any other team from all of this stuff. That's the story here.
So I looked this up last week. I was trying to find it again. You know who one of the there's apparently some stat out there called actual spin rate, okay, that relates to pure spin rate.
As opposed to unpure spin rate?
I guess.
Go ahead, give me the number.
Look, I can't tell you how they calculate it, okay? I just know that the guys on this list can spin the crap out of the thing.
Go.
Okay, you know what Red Sox picture was on there? Who would you guess?
Garrett Richards. Or Pivetta.
Matt Barnes.
Oh, Barnes spins the crap out of the ball, for sure.
Matt
yes.
Barnes. So again, all of a sudden now, like, Matt Barnes has turned into Mariano Rivera? Has this happened overnight?
Well, they keep giving up, you know, 6 runs in the first inning. How often have they gotten to Barnes in the last week?
It's good reason.
Thank you.
he's another one to watch, though.
A good excuse to not put him in the game.
No, definitely. That guy spins the crap out of it.
Totally. So again, now look at Barnes, who over the course of his career has been a pretty good major league pitcher. You know, again, I've always said he's like a 7th, 8th inning guy at best. Now, all of a sudden, he's the most dominant closer in the big leagues? Little Elmer's glue.
Will in Topsfield. Hi, Will, on the Pats.
Hey, guys. Yeah, I want to get back to Stephon Gilmore. I mean, it really sucks that he's holding out. You know, I definitely don't see Bill offering him a big, fat, long-term contract again, given his age. So, kind of just wondering what you guys think happens from here. I mean, are we going to trade him and what could we even get for him? I mean, it'd be nice to get a first, but I don't know if that's going to happen.
My guess is the Pats cave. They caved last year. Gilmore was in the same spot. I think he showed up for this camp last year, but then he came down with a little something in training camp and left the reservation.
Right.
And then they adjusted his contract and he was back. So it was a de facto holdout last year. And the Pats, they didn't give him any new money. They advanced some money from this year to last year. And so now this year, he's a little short. And my guess is the Pats will blink. My guess is they'll blink again. They blinked last year, they'll blink again. You'll know it's for real, though, if Gilmore decides to talk. Because, again, this is something Bill hates more than anything, is when players go public with the money thing. That is like the third rail for Bill.
you got to do what you got to do for your contract. You know, maybe in the short term now I'll cover for you. Yeah, it was traffic, weather. I don't know. I didn't take attendance, whatever. But if
weather,
if Gilmore comes out and actually starts talking, then, you know, then it's different. So Gilmore is playing it the way the Pats want him to now. If you got to hold out, you got to hold out, but keep your mouth shut. Don't say anything because they're so sensitive and insecure down there when it comes to this issue above all others, the money issue, because they know it's a real thing there. And perception is pervasive across the league about how they pay or don't pay their players. So just don't go public with it. You'll know it's DEFCON if Gilmore goes public. If he's quiet and out, that's different. I still think they'll come to terms and something will happen eventually.
Well, and you told me last week, too, there's a difference between holding out in minicamp and then holding out in training camp.
So this is new. It's all with the new CBA. These rules have all changed. But I heard it reported in the Aaron Rodgers thing, so I assume it must apply here. And that is, these freaking owners are so cheap that if you get fined in training camp, for missing out training camp days, the team cannot credit you back the money. Because what used to happen all the time is that these guys would hold out in training camp and it would be reported that it's costing this guy $15,000 a day or he's being fined $100,000 for missing July. And then when the guy signed his contract, the team would give him back the fine money or never collect the fine money. So it would never, almost ever, ever come into play. Because the teams would always, when they reached agreement on long-term extensions, would forgive the fines. They wrote it into the new CBA that you can no longer forgive the fines. They have to pay the money. So these cheap-ass owners now require players in full training camp. This is a long way of saying the mini camps are different. I think the mini camps, the team can still forgive the fines. So that's another thing to keep an eye on. So, it's been reported that Rodgers missing the Green Bay mini camp cost him $90,000 or whatever. The team can give him back the money if they want or not force him to pay up. Once you get to training camp, that's off the table. It's required that the payer play the fine in training camp.
So it's a bigger statement when the player skips training camp.
Bingo.
Okay.
Bingo.
So if Gilmore holds out in training camp, then we have a real issue.
Correct. Or if he talks, I think you'll have a real issue.
Or posts on social media. That's what I got to start looking around for.
Absolutely. That counts too.
By the way, just quickly, four-seam spin rate, Matt Barnes, now number one in the major leagues.
Interesting. How that happened.
Everyone else apparently has dropped.
That curveball is pretty nasty too. Dave in Acton. Go ahead, Dave. David! Okay, babe, you can call us back. Shree and Melrose on the Patriots quarterback situation. Hi, Shree.
Hi, guys. I was just wondering what Bill's fascination is with Cam Newton. He threw 8 touchdowns and 18 interceptions last year with a good hand. What is he going to do with a bad hand? Throw 2 touchdowns and 20 interceptions? It's just ridiculous.
But he's cheap, Shree. He's cheap. He's nice and cheap. It goes back to that. If Cam Newton wanted anything approaching real money, would he be anywhere close to this team right now?
Did he seriously throw 8 touchdowns last year?
8.
Yeah. Forget this, man?
I do.
You don't have that number?
I don't remember it being quite that low.
Yeah.
8.
Oh, my God.
What did Brady have in the playoffs?
Like
6?
Like, yeah, 10. It was
12 or something.
10. Yeah. No, I looked at that. I looked up. It was 10. Now that you say this, I do remember comparing it to Brady. Yeah, that's it. Maybe it's just a Monday. I'm a little slow on the draw. That's right. Brady had more in the playoffs than Newton had all year. I remember now.
Brady had that in probably a half dozen two-game stretches during the season.
Wow, that's so bad.
The full year. 8 touchdowns.
Wow. I got to look that up again just to see.
Oh, no, it's true. Also look up his contract. Nice and cheap.
Oh, my God. That is so good. 8 touchdowns, 10 picks. Wow, you blow. That is dog crap.
And take a look at some of the video coming out from the camp today, how he's throwing.
I mentioned on the simulcast, we're showing some of it. Oh, my God. Airmail.
Oof.
Like, airmail over these guys' heads.
You look like Rafael Devers out there.
Unbelievable. Spin rate on that thing. Again, it's a re-entry Monday brought to you by our friends at East Boston Savings Bank. We're mixing in some stuff from the weekend, including Bruce Cassidy today explaining his decision to stick with Tuukka Rask in the playoffs. More insight into how the Bruins handled that situation. Jim Murray was off last week. You know, he's got a personal stake in the Tuukka Rask story. So we'll get Murray's thoughts on how that played out last week, Cassidy's explanation today, and your calls after Big Jim's update. Don't go anywhere.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music.
Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone. What do you want to talk about?
Mike in Framingham, what?
Felger and Max.
Hey, I love your show. I don't agree with anything you guys ever say, though.
More Felger and Max on 98.5, The Sports Hub.
I'll tell you the process, and I'll be quite open with you. Obviously, Tuca's acknowledged that he was playing hurt. And he met with us every day, medical staff, myself, goalie Bob, to go through his status, particularly in the playoffs. I mean, this was an injury that occurred, you know, he played game one with it, you know, against Washington right through to obviously game six in New York. So, you know, it was the same injury, you know, sort of the same player dealing with it. We just got different results in the second round. So we were never going to run out a goal, you know, a player that wasn't fit to play. So it first passed through him, then alluding to your question, and he regularly told us he was ready to go. And then it comes on to me. I have to make the final call. Who gives us the best chance to win? And I chose Tuca. So no regrets on that. We feel he gave us the best chance to win. It didn't work out that way. And then some of those decisions also go through the leadership group. Where are you guys at in terms of your mental psyche with the goaltending? And, you know, they were all on board with Tuca as well. They certainly believe in Swayman, but Tuca's been there and done it. So that's where that decision came from. And at the end of the day, it didn't work out. So you're always going to sort of analyze some things that happened after the series, but that's when we felt he gave us the best chance to win. That was the decision. He was healthy to play, had played, played well. And that was that.
So as a condensed, edited version of a longer answer, which basically it boils down to, Maz, why did Tuukka Rask play at the end of that playoff series? Because he told him he was ready to. He told him he could do it. And it was like, it was up to Rask.
Yeah.
It's sort of the way Cassidy presented it. It was up to Rask and the other players wanted him to. So that's who he went with. How do you feel about that?
Oh, I hate it. Again, the coach's job is to make the decision that's best for the team independent of what the players want. So to me, I'd put it on Cassidy. And again, I'll include Neely and Sweeney because my guess is that a decision like that, they probably had some discussion about it because that's a pretty big one. So, but to me, it's on the leadership. And I mean management and the coach. And I put Cassidy at the top of the list if you subscribe to the theory that the coach makes that call. That's why you have a coach. To make decisions that the players aren't capable of making because they're too close to it.
That's why you have a hierarchy. You're the coach, you the GM, you the organization. You're the one that needs to make the tough decision and go with the kid and you ride or die with him. After what happened Monday night, you can't put him out there Wednesday. You can't. And like I've mostly lost all the fire I had in my big belly by the end of that nightmare second period on Wednesday, where it like basically started my vacation off terribly. Like, oh, great, wonderful. But I was really just more mad at myself for actually believing that this group, this team could go on yet another real run. How that happened, like how it ended, that's the Bruins experience. Hop on board, get fooled again every spring for the better part of a decade, really my whole life. Further proof, 2011, one big anomaly thanks to Tim Thomas and them having bigger balls than Vancouver. And Tuca, at this point, like, I can't even get mad. He is what he is. Nobody should be shocked or even really pissed off at this point. I'm not. I'm just pissed at the organization and really just disappointed in them in their inability to think outside the box and feel this indebtedness to him. Like, he shouldn't have been out there, period. He should not have started Wednesday night's game after he gets pulled on Monday. That's it. It's a simple decision. I couldn't believe it.
The loyalty to this player is just unbelievable. So why did they play Rask at the end of that series? Because he told him he wanted to. That's pretty much it. That's what Cassidy said. That he said he was ready to go.
And too much power, I think, with guys like Bergeron and the leaders on this team and maybe Marchand. So to hear that again. That's why there's a hierarchy. That's why there's a head coach. That's why there's a GM. That's why there's an organization and how things trickle down. Are the players good to go? Okay. Is that the best interest of the team?
Oh, no. Yeah, the players only have as much power as the coach and management gives them.
Exactly.
You know, so if the players can say all they want, but if the coach and management looks at him and says, no, no, listen, we're making the call.
Do you think that happens here?
No.
So this is
no, it doesn't.
This is a developing opinion I have on the Bruins. I think it's just highlighted by the way they handle the goaltending thing. The players have too much say. Their veteran players have too much power. They're entitled, comfortable.
And that's why he's going to be back, too, because I think logical, the logical thinking would be like, okay, now it's finally time to move on. We have a couple of kids in the pipeline here. Time to move on. He's going to be back. They're going to. They're going to pay him.
So, but I mean, you don't usually ascribe this to hockey because it doesn't feel like it happens in that sport with their culture. And it certainly doesn't feel like it happens with Bruce Cassidy because we feel on the outside that Cassidy holds his players accountable because mm-hmm. he's honest at a press conference. But I'm sorry. If this is the way he handles the goalie thing, and he keeps bringing up the leadership group, I am led to believe that the players are in control down there. And it's not Bruce. It's the star players and the veteran players. Because they played Rask as he said he was ready to go. That's it. You didn't use your eyes or make your, you know, use your judgment on what you're seeing. You just deferred to the player and the players. I mean, that's basically what Bruce is saying, that he deferred to what Rask told him and goalie Bob. And the leadership group. He deferred. Bruce deferred to the player and his teammates.
Maybe this goes back to, didn't Pac-Man suggest last week that, you know, that whole disaster of an experience that he had in Washington, Cassidy, when he took over that team, that maybe now he's gone too far the other way.
Yeah.
That now he's sort of, you know, letting the veterans have too much say, too much power. And so, and again, look, I come back to the same thing. That's on him.
Of course it is.
That's not on the players. The players will take what you give them. If you give them an inch, they'll take a foot. So, of course, always, like, the player will always side, more often than not, will side on the with another player. Someone had to jump in there and say, no, he's deteriorating. The goalie's deteriorating.
He repeatedly told us he was ready to go. So what? Are you watching him? Did you watch? Can you see? Oh, my God, that's so bad. He's ready to go, so it's his net. And the leadership group, they got to be comfortable, too. Fat, why are you so worried about how comfortable they are? You're down 3-2. You're going down again. And you're going to hit your wagon to that guy of all guys. You're going to hit your wagon to that guy. You've got to be kidding me.
And you've seen goalie changes just in this playoff run from other teams. Like, what? It's so annoying. It's so annoying. So, again, ultimately in how this all ended, I'm not like it's all because of Rask. No, ultimately this playoff run and how it ended, it's an indictment on management more than anything else. It really is.
And I think, you know, like in some respects, I think they've got a really good culture there and really good DNA. But maybe it's not championship caliber. Maybe it's just good, not great. It's just good in terms of being consistent and winning the games you should and making the playoffs. But to actually put your balls on the table and win it all, maybe they don't got it. They're just too comfortable. They're entitled. The players get to pick who's on the ice. Like, that's what happened here. Cassidy said it today. He basically deferred to what Rask told him and his leadership group told him. That's why they played that freaking loser again when he clearly wasn't ready to go. Oh, that's just wretched. So what do you do about that? You fire the coach, you fire the GM, you blow it up. I got some thoughts on that. We'll pick it up with your calls in our long commercial-free segment next.
Felger and Mass on 98.5 The Sports Hub and streaming anywhere you go on the Sports Hub app.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
He is a manipulative weasel.
And Matt.
He does himself no service by actually talking.
You've got to listen to believe.
It's about me.
Yes, absolutely.
It's about me.
No question.
98.5 The Sports Hub.
On that decision, I mean, how much more difficult did that become to turn to Swayman the further away you got from him playing?
Well, that becomes the part, as I said, once we get all the information from Tuukka, who was our starter, that he was good to go. then you say, okay, you start factoring in performance. Does the other guy give you a better chance to win? And as I said, we felt Tuukka's performance, other than game five, was very good. And then you go, okay, well, should we put the other guy in? Is it time then to give him a break? Or does the other guy give us the best chance to win, the other guy being Swayman as a backup? And we just felt that, no, that wouldn't be the case. And some of it had to do with that. Absolutely, the farther you go, especially for a younger guy that's not really been in that position that much, you know, is that the best spot to put him in? Obviously, if Tuukka couldn't go, that would have been the decision. It was easy for us because he was the next guy up. He'd been preparing to go in if something should happen. But, you know, Tuukka was fit to go. So it did factor in a little bit, but at the end of the day, it was more about Tuukka, less about Swayman.
No, because on the Bruins, the veteran players determine who plays and when. It's not the coach. It's the veteran players. You defer to the veteran players. You defer to the leadership group. And Tuukka, it was up to Tuukka to tell them if he wanted to play or not. This year, he decided, no, I'll play. Even though in the past, more often than not, he chose not to play. This year, he said, no, I'll play. So they just let him play. Duh. Gah. You use your eyes. Any balls whatsoever. So, entitled, spoiled culture down there. Players run the show. I don't know. I think there's something to that. Now, thank God that they're sort of, you know, they're dedicated, professional, hardworking players. Like, that's a good group down there. It is. But when you let the players run the show, maybe you just don't, you aren't as good as you could be because everyone's a little too comfortable, a little too complacent, a little too in command. And so that's how Tuukka Rask plays the end of that series. Freaking gross. So fire the coach, fire the GM. We started to get to this last week, Maz, and I just thought I'm obviously reluctant to lead that charge. I don't know if you can tell. Like, I'm not leading that charge. And I want to explain why. Because certainly I led that charge with the last group, which was Julian and Shirelli, because I really think they deserved it. And I really think they were taking the team in the wrong direction. And it turns out I was right. Because both those guys have fallen square on their face since they left here and have done absolutely nothing. Montreal is back in the Final Four, but only after they fired Claude. And Shirelli, oh my God, don't get me started. So, but this is why I'm kind of reluctant. Because I think these guys, Sweeney and Cassidy, have done a decent job. Decent, right? Don't take that too far. I'm not telling you like I'm throwing them a parade or anything. Or I'm happy for regular season wins. But I think they put it back on the track from Shirelli and Julian. Those guys were driving this thing into the ground. And I think Sweeney and Cassidy righted the ship and got you going back in the right direction. Now, have they reached their ceiling? Are those two championship caliber? Maybe they're not. And maybe they've taken you as far as they can take you. But I'm just a little reluctant. Because it could be worse. You could go back to Shirelli and Julian. And I don't think they've done a horrible job. I think they've done a good job, small g. So that's just sort of my reluctance. You know, there was this narrative. And, you know, I know you guys showed me the tweets as like Boston stats or something, some Twitter, some important Boston information Twitter page. You know what I'm talking about?
What stat?
I don't know. What's that website? Beta was reading the tweets.
Boston Jimmy Sports Inf.
No, Jimmy put it in our email exchange. Whatever. There was a. It's like a Boston Sports Inf thing, but for Bruin stats.
Okay.
And there, and I heard Beetle reading it before, and Jimmy made a point to put it in our email chain, and I read it. And the guy said that Sweeney should be fired because he's basically taken this thing. He's, for all intents and purposes, driven it into the ground. And his point was that when Sweeney took over, he was handed a roster with Bergeron in his prime, Marchand in his prime, Pastrnak coming into his prime, guys like Riley Smith, Louis Erickson, and Dougie Hamilton on this team, and he hasn't taken him to the next level. And the guy put on his list, do you hear what I just said?
Yeah, Louis Erickson.
Louis Erickson.
Yeah.
Like Don Sweeney was handed Louis Erickson, Riley Smith, and Doug Hamilton, and this is what he did with them.
Well, again, this is a stat-driven gentleman, so no wonder why he liked Louis Erickson.
So, but this is why I said in the emails, the guy should probably stick to stats.
Yeah.
Like he's acting like Don Sweeney was handed some sort of young developing roster, and Cassidy was handed some young developing roster, and they've taken it and driven it into the ground. They were given Louis Erickson and Doug Hamilton and Riley Smith.
Were people calling for Sweeney's head by the end of the week? Like yeah, callers?
Yeah.
And
yeah. And I think there's some of it. And I think it should definitely be looked at. I'm just telling you why I'm reluctant to. The fact is, Sweeney and Casty took over a team that had missed the playoffs two straight years. Shirelli had driven the roster pretty much into the ground. It was locked up because Shirelli had signed so many bad contracts. There was little flexibility, no movement. Everything was locked in place because Shirelli overpaid everybody. And the players had long since stopped responding to Claude and playing in his system. So Sweeney and Casty took over a team that missed the playoffs two straight years. And I think righted the ship and got them going back in the right direction. So I'm just a little hesitant to say blow it all up.
Yeah, maybe hot seat, though, because this was a bad postseason run for Sweeney. I mean, he hit on Hall at the deadline, so great, and maybe bring him back at 3-6 or something like that. But I'm sorry for not stepping in to demand Rask sit his ass down after Game 5. Given Kevin Miller's injury history, you pay him, you bring him back. They don't have a deeper defense. Turns out I think you whiffed on Mike Riley because he's not a top four defenseman. And maybe worst of all, because I'm sorry, I can't help avoid this one now. That 2015 Barzal draft thing got glaring in that series and looks like it's going to continue to get worse. Did you watch yesterday against Tampa? Who had the first goal? Barzal. So now he's a real legit factor in the postseason on that Islander team. So he woke up, and I couldn't avoid that. I'm sorry. Like, so I go back to that, too.
Definitely. So, the part that worries me about Sweeney is the development, the draft and development.
Their drafting has sucked overall, and I'm happy to fire him and bring in someone else. No problem. You want to tell me Sweeney's not championship caliber? Fine. You want to tell me Cassidy's not championship caliber? Fine. Upgrade him. Fire him. Upgrade him. I'm not going to fight you. I just think the thing that I started to hear last week, like these guys drove the thing into the ground, is stupid. They actually righted the ship and got you turned back in the right direction.
They kind of extended the window. I mean, after Game 7 of a couple of years ago, I was like, well, that's it.
They handed over a roster that was locked in place because of all the bad contracts and a team under Claude that had missed the playoffs two straight years. So just, like, if you're going to go back and give me the history, like, get that part right. But that is inconsequential now to looking forward. And from this point forward, are those the right guys to lead the team? I will tell you no. If they're just going to defer to the effing leadership group over who should play and not play in important playoff games, that's freaking ridiculous. What are we paying you for? Just to defer to the players who are comfortable and complacent as it is? No, they needed a harder decision there. They needed a tougher decision. They needed someone they're willing to put their balls on the table, and no one was. So no wonder they went out meekly in the second round. No one was willing to show any guts when it came to their goalie.
Yeah, the part of the problem is that there's no way to leverage these veteran guys because they don't have any talent coming. So again, they got to keep all these guys happy. The part to me that's most frustrating about, and I'm talking Sweeney now, not Casty, is that you look at his whole platform was built on, I don't like seeing our young players sprinkled around the league, our young talent end up in other organizations, whether it be Blake Wheeler or anybody else. And so what have they pumped out? So now look, McAvoy is his, okay? And so is Swayman, although, you know, only a handful of games in the NHL so far. Who else?
Really nothing. I mean, Lozon, I still think has a chance.
I mean, so but the whole platform, and really no forwards. There was all that hype around Donato and Bjork. And for Donato, they got Coyle. How does that one look right now?
Horrible.
So
I mean, the trade is fine. The contract looks horrible.
So I do look at the whole thing now and say Sweeney hasn't delivered on that part of it. And again, I'm not telling you that it's a fireable offense today. But if that thing doesn't turn fast, oh, he will run him into the ground.
Oh, I'm happy to upgrade. Happy to. No problem. You won't see me playing that embarrassing game. Well, who are you going to get? Yeah, find somebody. That's their job. And then we'll second guess that guy. But, that's that. I'm just telling you why I'm not leading the charge. Because they don't suck. They don't suck. Shirelli and Claude, sorry, sucked. And do suck, as has been proven as fact. Because they've both fallen on their faces subsequently. Okay? These guys don't suck. But I don't know how good they are either. And so you can find someone. So if you want to say that, I mean, certainly Shirelli and Julian were a massive upgrade from, Dave Lewis and, O'Connell, right? So, like, they upgraded that. I think Casty and Sweeney upgraded from Shirelli and Julian.
Oh, Dave Lewis was a clown.
Right? So you want to find me, like, the next the next level? You want to go take me one step up from those guys? Happy to do it. No problem. We'll go back to your phones. We also have a Maz Patriots crockpot take.
Oh.
That it must have been in this thing now for like a week.
Oh, no, it was a slow cook.
How long have you had it in there?
No, it's been in there close to a week, yeah.
Oh, this is going to fall right off the bone.
No, I was waiting for the Bruins to be eliminated, frankly.
Okay, so
but it's going to play nicely off of your take just a second ago.
He actually put it in the freezer, and now we've de-thawed it. And this was something Maz cooked up last week, so we're going to reveal it coming up next. He's got a hot take on the Patriots that has just occurred to him. We'll do it after a Murray's 90-second update. No commercials. Don't go anywhere.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.